Good day to you. God bless you. Welcome to the Shepherd's Chapel. Welcome to this family Bible study hour. Ready to get back in the book of Job, our Father's Word. How precious it is that it gives us our daily guide on. That is to say, it leads you in the pathway that will bring you happiness, success, and most of all, probably peace of mind and the love of your Father and that return of His love. Our Father finally interrupts the meeting that Job has had with his friends and begins to speak himself. This was done, no doubt, whereby you would know who you should listen to and how much good it would do you if you did listen. Now, we've had 37 chapters of listening to ratchet jaw friends. Do you know something? It didn't. If anything, it did harm. It didn't do any good. So when someone is telling you about our Father and His plan and they're ignorant about the Word, you're wasting your time. And theirs too, we should go into that. That's the reason for this book of Job, is to teach you who you should listen to and what is man's worth. And obviously, when our Father begins speaking and tells Job to get up off the ground, stand up and act like a man and be ready to do war with our enemies, that we find out that He expects perhaps more from us than we might think. For the conflict still continues between Father and Satan. And He expects you to do your part in that, not let Him run your family. Does He? I don't know. You do. And that's what this is about. He's comparing inorganic things now, such as stars and, I suppose we can say that, things that at least not earthly, planets and the very rainfall and things of that nature. And he's saying, Job, do you think you could do that? And of course the answer is no. No way could man do that. Man can barely get by, much less create things. So he had just mentioned the zodiac and the stars and heavens and a couple, Orion. Now we come to verse 33 following that statement in chapter 38. A word of wisdom from our Father. Let's go with it. And it reads, Father speaking to Job, knowest thou the ordinances of heaven? Do you know what the laws are of heaven? A man probably is hard-pressed to know the laws of the earth. By this I mean the laws of gravity and so forth. Canst thou set the dominion thereof in the earth? You think you could have that much order? You think you could have dominion over the things of this earth? You see, bear in mind, man was placed over the animals, and he's supposed to have dominion over them. And sometimes man kind of messes up. Verse 34, canst thou lift up thy voice to the clouds, that abundance of waters may cover thee? Can you speak to the clouds and make it rain, Job? What God wants you to see in this is the insignificance of man without God. Now, if you pray for a rain, and our Father sees fit, perhaps, you know, if it meets His plan, and He rains on both the just and the unjust, it must fit God's plan, or He's not going to alter anything, that's for certain. Why? God's plan comes first. But simply man to say to a cloud, would you let it rain? Forget it. You're wasting your time. Verse 35, canst thou send lightnings that they may go and say unto thee, here we are? Oh, there's no way. Now, we know that the supernatural had the ability to do that. We know that Revelation chapter 13 along about verse, 11, 12, 13, or 14, somewhere along there, that Satan can snap his fingers and cause fire to come from heaven, which is frost, which is lightning. That's going to be pretty impressive. But mortal man cannot. Not without God's help. Understand, if God aligns you as a witness or something, then you have no idea what might happen. But at this time, mortal man without God is, we were born innocent and helpless. There's nothing more helpless than a little human baby. Probably one of the frailest little birthed creatures there is. Without help, being fed, swaddled, the whole bit, all right? And needs care for many years before they can be on their own. Verse 36, who hath put wisdom in the inward parts? Question. Or who hath given understanding to the heart? That's to say the unspoken word or the mind. Who has put understanding in the mind? Now, I suppose we have to look at this in two ways to be accurate. And that is to say, who has put the wisdom in the ordinance of things? That's to say the dominion, God's dominion, that it should reign when it should reign and so on and so forth. Naturally, our Father did. That's an easy question to answer. But at the same time, to give understanding into the minds of a person, into the mind of a person, the Spirit can give unction. And there are certain things when God created these bodies that intuitively, I believe, certain people know. Now, I'm not, don't read more into that than spoken necessarily, but I suppose to know something intuitively is as simple as some people have enough common sense to reason through things if God allows it. Verse 37, who can number the clouds in wisdom? Think you could? Or who can stay the bottles of heaven? And of course this means the water. Who can keep it from raining? Simply by speaking to nature. You can't. That's an impossibility. 38. When the dust groweth into hardness, and the clods there are cleaved fast together. When simple dust, and you know, like you kick dust and it flies, and it raises in the air at the least, but you wet it and it turns to mire. That's what it means. And then when that mire dries, sometimes it turns to hard clods, is simply a part of doing this in a natural sense. Can you do it? Well, you could do it on a small scale, but it wouldn't be natural. 39. Wilt thou hunt? Now here we're going to change. Well, let's read the verse and then I'll comment. 39. Wilt thou hunt the prey for the lion? Question. Or fill the appetite of the young lions? Can you produce for them, Job? Well, we're going to have a transition here from inorganic materials and things to organic things, creatures, and so forth, thought covered here probably is instinct and appetite. Can you place the instinct in animals? Do you know what gives them their instincts? That's wisdom and survival in this world. You couldn't give it to them because they already have it. Who did it? God did when He created them. And of course you can't... How could man go out and hunt without using artillery, or by that I mean weapons, but a lion can hunt much better than a man can. Got it? Why? God gave him those instincts. God did it for him. That is to say, the lion. Verse 40. When they couch in their dens, and that's when they're lazing about in their dens, and abide in the covert to lie in wait. Could you do that for them, Job? Of course you couldn't. You know what would happen to a man if he went in a lion's den? 41. Who provideth for the raven his food? when his young ones cry unto God. Now think about that statement. When his young ones cry unto God, they wonder for lack of meat. In other words, God had said once through Messiah that he is aware if even a sparrow falls to the ground. Well, this kind of documents that or gives a second witness to the fact that he knows even when a bird is hungry. And the balance of nature of carnivores to take the weak and to cause the law of survival being the strongest, the fittest, all in part of God's plan in this particular earth age. Man can't be aware of all those things. Now, if you were to not do your own business and spend all day and all night and all your time being a bird watcher, perhaps you would know, but I would say probably if it was a wild raven, you could do very little about it. But God can. And I'm talking about out in the waste, wide open spaces here. Man can control his little part of the environment and do many things in an imitative nature or surrounding. Chapter 39 continues, but let me say a word before we start. We're going to have a little change of thought. God's going to describe some of his creations. And I believe in my mind, and I really feel I'm correct, is that he's kind of saying to you, can you learn a lesson from this creature? If you, as a human being, were going to copy certain traits of fitness and survival and obedience and focus and discipline, which of these animals would you choose from in as much as God? And what is the Father telling you? I've even given you an example, Job, in my very creation. Learn from it. All right? Having said that, chapter 39, verse 1. Knowest thou the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? Or canst thou mark when the hinds do calve? Now, these are... And this has to do with watching over and providing for. Could you do that? Have you ever seen a little mountain goat, the way they prance on those rocky ridges? A man would bust his gourd if he tried to prance around or follow these little wild mountain goats. There's no way. Even the little babies, they're born that way. It's natural with them. Very, very graceful. Verse 2, canst thou number the months that they fulfill? Or knowest thou the time when they bring forth? Can you start the labor pains, Job? Can you tell them when it's time for the labor pains to start? In other words, man is about as helpless as, I'll use it, a fish out of water when it comes to commanding nature. He can mess it up. He can pollute it. But naturally, why? God didn't create it, nor did he mean it to be that way, that man, we know the months that each animal carries, but to the exact instant that something is going into labor, there, no one could know. Man can't even tell when his own kind would go into labor with exactness. By that I mean to the second, verse 3. And I'm not talking about artificial means of causing any of these things to happen. Verse 3. They bow themselves, or they kneel themselves. They bring forth their young ones. They cast out their sorrows. That's labor pains. They travail at birth. When it's over, it's cast out in a sense. You think you could prevent that? I don't think so. Know why? It's natural. Verse 4. Their young ones are in good liking. That means they grow up with corn. They grow fat, healthy. Little babies, I mean, they kind of just, I mean, get out there and root for themselves, so to speak. They go forth and return not unto them. They go out into that open field and take care of themselves. Do you see little babies doing that of our own? Uh-uh. Not without many years of training and growth, but in the animal kingdom, it doesn't take very long. And they don't have to come back, and it's why? It's instinct. You want to remember that. You know, man has a great deal of instinct if he'll tap into it, if he has faith in himself. But most of all, first, you must put your faith in God. Understand that? Common sense. Verse 5. Who hath sent out the wild ass free? Or who hath loosed the bands of the wild ass? Who has... I would translate this a little bit differently from the Hebrew. I would say, who has set the wild ass free in the open desert land? Of course, our Father did. He created. But who causes them to band together as a family when they wander that wilderness? United, in other words. They do. They stick pretty close together. And they fight for each other and so on and so forth. There's safety in numbers, and they know that. Who did that? Well, our Father did. Then what follows next would be for a person, if you are thinking to yourself, well, it stands to reason then, if that natural instinct is born into them, and if God did that for them, He will do it for you also and your family. By that I mean He will look out for you. He will take care of you if you use that natural born instinct. I would fall back on, who did the little raven birds cry to? God. In the 41st verse of the last chapter. Do you ever cry to Him? You ever talk to Him? Verse 6, whose house I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwellings. This barren land is the salty land. And this is true that the wild ass, it's much like what we would call a burrow, okay? And they do lick salt. When they partake let's say the little stunted brush, and I'm trying to think of the name of it, and I will in a moment. The heath bush, which is really, they keep it cropped back. It's stunted because they chomp at it all the time, picking up the green and lick the salt. He's right at home there. Why? God created him to operate and function there. That's his dwelling. Verse 7. He scorneth the multitude of the city. No. A burrow in the city? Well, he's talking to Job. He kind of laughs at the tumult of the city, the trouble they have in cities, the rush, the tension, gathering yourself too close together as garbage piles up, so does disease by the nearness, and you got a lot of sick people. Some people like cities. Some people don't. But the wild ass knows better than to live in a city. Neither regardeth he the crying of the driver. Consider an old mule, and a mule is a hybrid brought about by man's forcing it upon a mare, the birth of a mule. But mules coming from that same family, you know the stubborn reputation that mules have? Well, burros are, some of them are just about as bad. The driver or the taskmaster, This Hebrew word is an interesting word. It can even be translated a tax collector. It's a very interesting word. If you ever want to make a little side study, take it back to the Hebrew, and you'll be amused and amazed. But it is true. The wild ass, until he's ready to do something, he might get around to doing it, But until he's ready to do it, it might take a two before to get his attention. Right? He isn't all that attentive to the taskmaster. He kind of likes to do things at his own pace and know he's going to get his reward before he does it. Verse 8. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searcheth after every green thing. I mean, that's it. If you give it the rough, hey, he can handle it. That's what he was created for. So there you have the wild ass, a description of him, how God created him. Now we're going to a creature, you're going to have it here in the ninth verse, called a unicorn. There is no such thing as a unicorn. It should never, never have been translated unicorn in the English, because it's very specific in the Hebrew, the wild ox. Okay? It's cattle. It's an ox. There is no such thing as a unicorn. Well, it says it right there in the Bible. Well, it does not say it right there in the manuscripts. When the King James folks translated this, they wrote you a letter in the forefront of the original, which you can acquire a copy of the original right here from this chapel, and that letter is written to the reader telling them to be aware of such things as this. Okay? So let's go with the unicorn, another animal. Kind of keep in mind what we're talking about here now, okay? What would you liken yourself to? Have you ever heard it said that some people remind them of certain species? All right, 9. Will the unicorn be willing to serve thee or abide by thy crib? Now, again, this is a work oxen. What, are they going to be willing to work for you, pull your old plow, and abide and be real happy at your corn crib? I don't know. What kind of man are you? You got the know-how? Are you focused enough that, you know, you got to remember one thing. A lot of people, I suppose, in this generation, and it irritates me because the nearest I've come to really getting in bad trouble, I might as well finish it, I started it, is correcting people for abusing and mistreating animals, livestock, on farms. There's people working for me tending cattle and mistreat them. Hey, don't do that. You know, a dumb animal can't speak out for themselves, but I sure can. You're not supposed to mistreat animals. Do you have the ability to make a wild ox love you to the point it'll stay at your crib and want to do your work? That may sound strange to some, but people that have an agriculture background have an advantage in studying God's Word. I still say that. Verse 10. Canst thou bind the unicorn with his band in the furrow? Can you put harness on him and make him obey and be disciplined that he'll stay in the furrow and not plow up the crop? Or will he harrow the valleys after thee? Will he? I don't know. What kind of man are you? 11. Wilt thou trust him because his strength is great? Or wilt thou leave thy labor to him? Would you put faith in him? There's nothing... a good work animal is worth taking very good care of, all right? Verse 12. Wilt thou believe him that he will bring home thy seed and gather it into thy barn? This takes management, of course. And if you are good enough of a trainer and leader and teacher, you know, things have to be taught. It takes management. But animals can be very well behaved, much better than people. And they can be taught good manners. And a lot of times it's simply by setting the example of being good to them, feeding them, currying them, whatever the case might be, showing love to them. Do you know that an animal can sense love when they look at you? They really can. I don't have any difficulty in believing that because I've experienced it many, many times with many, many different types of animals. So there you got it. There you've got the old work ox. I mean, they'll really do it for you. They'll bring the bacon home, all right, if you're pretty good. Now, don't you forget something. You see, way back in the beginning, God gave us control over livestock. He created Adam to be the farmer and then made domestic animals afterward and even let him name them. So you're supposed to have dominion over them and control. And that's one of the things that God's a little disappointed with at Job about here. Job hasn't really managed that well. What am I talking about? He's let Satan just clean him out without ever accusing the accuser. We're going to go to something else. Here's something else. How would you compare yourself to the work ox? Do you work well? Do you make the best employee that can possibly be? Well, that's the way it should be. Verse 13. Notice gavest thou has been added, and this is kind of chopped up. I'm going to work with it with you, okay? And then you can check me out. Well, we'll cover it. Gavest thou the goodly wings unto the peacocks? Now, there's this word peacocks has been added also, though it's not in italics. It should be ostrich, okay? The big bird, the big-legged bird, okay? Or wings and feathers upon the ostrich. Now, this just really, to me, loses it. What it says is, have you ever looked at the ostrich? She's got little old bitty stubby wings, and she flaps them like she was a stork. But she can't fly. But she's happy. You'd think she really had something and was a mighty bird, but she can't get it in gear. She is not going anywhere as far as airborne is concerned. She can't fly, but she'd like for you to think she can. That's the implication, okay? 14. Which leaveth her eggs in the earth and warmeth them in dust. In other words, when the old ostrich gets ready to lay an egg, or she doesn't hatch them or sit on them, she digs a hole and drops them in there, covers them over, and goes about her flopping little ways. She could care less. Now think about it. Do you understand what he's talking about? Would you liken yourself to this? I don't know. How do you treat your kids? 15. And forgetteth that the foot may crush them, or that the wild beast, or the beast of the field in the Hebrew, may break them. I mean, she forgets about them. She doesn't teach them anything at all about the ostrich heritage, where they came from, the family unit. And I'm going to tell you something else she will do. There's something else she'll bury in the sand. I mean, they're quite an animal, and I'm not knocking them, but this is the way God created them, and this is the way they are. And this is certainly not a creature you want to pattern after. She will dig a hole and put her head in the sand if she becomes frightened and let everything else hang out. I know a lot of people that think they're protecting themselves from our enemy, Satan, and they take this flyaway doctrine like they're sticking their head in the sand because they heard some man say it's there and it isn't, and they believe it. And they stick their head in the sand, and they got everything else hanging out for Satan just to whack-a-roo or whatever he wants to. And they wonder, why do I have such a rough life? Because they're no better than an ostrich. Poor, dumb animal with no care whatsoever for the young, that somebody might step on them or tromp them. It'll be okay, just flop my little wings and go. I think I can fly like an eagle. It's a good thing they're fast on their feet, though. I'm just teaching God's Word. This is the message He wants you to derive from it. So far, which matches you? The wild goat? The wild ass? Or the ox? The workman? Or are you like this old gal? Or this old boy? Maybe we better drop gender here before Pastor gets himself in trouble, but that really doesn't take that much care of their family nor worry about God's Word to figure out to use that law of survival instead of just going around clucking those little stubby wings, making like they can fly, or strutting around and not amounting to too much. I suppose that's how the word peacock was translated by the translators into it, because the Hebrew word for strut or to show off comes with it. And anybody that would think seriously that an ostrich had something to show off, they show it off a lot anyway. Maybe I'd better go on here. Anyway, what are you like? Think about it, all right? Verse 16. She is hardened against her young ones. She doesn't care. As though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without fear. And when her more vain, sticking her head in the sand, are untruths. Consider a person sticking their head and putting their faith into untruths. Stuff that is traditions of men is not written in God's Word, such as the rapture and a lot of other things. And you've got people with their heads in the sand and everything hanging out. Verse 17. Because God hath deprived her of wisdom. God has sent the spirit of stupor upon some. Romans chapter 11, verse 4. Neither hath he imparted to her understanding. Think about it. That's very serious. But God uses an analogy here that really gets it said. Verse 18. What time she lifteth up herself on high, she scorneth the horse and his rider. At the same time, if she really wants to produce, though, she can outrun a man on a horse. That's true. How do you figure that? Well, I guess we could say, Father, why did you make the thing? It's not exactly the prettiest bird in the world. And I suppose there are people that love ostrich. Some people even say they taste good. I don't know. I've never eaten one. I'm not too anxious to try it or think about it. But she is fast on her feet if she wants to run. But I suppose that compounds the fracture, does it not? I'll put that in a question form. Why in the world would something be so frightened that it would dig a hole and stick its head in the sand and stand there with everything hanging out when it had on itself a pair of legs that's faster than anything in the book? I mean, it could part company. Because it's just a little bit dumb, that's why. Now, I'm sure I'll get letters from ostrich lovers. There are lovers of all things, but maybe you could write a book, and maybe you could tell me some examples of how dumb they are. Verse 19, I want to get just a little bit into this, and then we'll have to stop for this lecture. 19. Hast thou given the horse strength? Man, have you given the... This is a war horse. And you just might as well write the word war by the horse, because that's what it is. Thou has you given the war horse strength? Hast thou clothed his neck with thunder? This means a mane. Have you put that flying mane on his neck? 20. Canst thou make him afraid as a grasshopper, a locust? The glory of his nostrils is terrible. Have you ever heard a horse snort when they're coming up into charging into battle? 21. He paweth in the valley. He digs at it and paws at the valley and rejoiceth in his strength. He goeth on to meet the armed men. He's not afraid of anything. A horse will charge. If he is a trained war horse, he will charge into anything. I don't know. Are you anything like this? I'm going to close with that. We'll talk more about this war horse. God kind of wants you to be a war horse. You see, here we're in this 39th chapter. And God has waited for Job to finally get up and tell Satan, I need to take some names and kick dragons. And Job hadn't said a thing. Job has been righteous. Been very righteous. But you might should let it settle into your mind, because God's going to say it before too long. Righteousness is fine. But God can't accomplish his whole plan with righteousness alone. All right. If you're one of those that think righteousness does it all, you never would get anything done. If you sit back on your righteousness in sackcloth and ashes, and that'd be kind of like that old ostrich tied in her head in the sand and Satan whomping her all over, taking the little feathers off of the little stubby wings she's got left, to her shame. She hadn't got many feathers anyway. But anyway, be that as it may, God kind of wants you to be a war horse for Satan. That's why he describes the gospel armor. You get mixed up in these traditions of men that you just have to lay down in the road and let everybody run over you if you're a Christian. That's a lie. We're to love our enemies. You're to love your children. If your children need correction, you correct them. If your enemy needs correction, you correct them. It may take a two before, but you correct them. That's real love. Tough love, yes. God's love is tough love. That's why he allowed Satan to romp on Job the way he has, because sooner or later he created Job. All of us, his children, where at least you've got a little bit of backbone, use it. Be a war horse. So which is it for you? Mountain goat? Wild ass? Ox, work ox, dumb ostrich, or a war horse, or maybe a combination of all. Think about it. God's talking to Job. He's giving Job an answer that makes sense. And it gets better and better as we draw near to the end of this book. Don't miss the remaining lectures. All right, bless your heart. You listen a moment, won't you please?